Hello and welcome to Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard, and today we are speaking with Charlie Hoopert. He is from Charisma on Command. If you haven't heard of him yet, he has an amazing YouTube channel called Charisma on Command, and you can also find his website, charismaoncommand.com. And he does videos about how to be charismatic, how to have a great life. He also does videos where he'll look at celebrities and characters in movies and break down the things about them that make them so interesting and magnetic. So it's a fascinating channel. If you're interested, it's Charisma on Command. Welcome to the show, Charlie.
Thank you so much for having me, Marie.
Thanks for being with us today. Now, I heard you on a podcast the other day, and you spoke about basically following your fear. And that was what caused me to reach out to you and invite you on Synchronicity, because I feel like that's such an amazing topic. But for people who aren't familiar with you yet, can you just tell us a little bit about your background and how you came to be doing this channel and having this company?
Sure. So I was a very introverted person throughout, my entire life. Still, there's parts of me that very much would just rather read a book sometimes than go out and interact with people. But I was very shy, very introverted all throughout high school. I won the most likely to break out of a shell in college senior superlative of 500 people. So it was well recognized that I definitely had a bit of a barrier between me and others. And in college, I realized that that was really getting in the way of a lot of the things that I wanted. Particularly, there were friends that I wanted to make that I didn't feel like I could connect with. There were girls that I had crushes on that I was too afraid to ever ask out. And so starting about when I was age 19, I went abroad to Spain and then Costa Rica. And during those study abroad periods, I had a chance to really reinvent myself because nobody there knew me and I was speaking a different language. And I tried very hard to push my comfort zone, to speak to people in the street, to try to make friends, to invite girls out on dates when I wanted to do that. And over the course of the last 10 years, I've just really focused a lot on what are initially the behaviors, but really what it became, or what are the mindsets that lead to some people being well-respected, well-liked, being very charismatic, strong leaders, and other people that were kind of like myself being more wallflowers, more timid, not being heard. And so once I started to feel like I got a grasp on it myself, I began teaching it, started in New York City with articles on a blog and in-person classes. And that's really shifted to YouTube recently because it's so much more fun to watch, you know, your favorite TV show character being broken down or a celebrity that you've seen, because it's very it's a visual thing, obviously, body language and those sorts of things. And that's kind of the direction that the business has gone in the last 2 years or so.
Awesome. Yeah, you're, for people who are fans of Game of Thrones, you're doing a lot of character breakdowns on Game of Thrones.
Yes. So what I realized on YouTube is that not everybody, while people might be interested in the topic of charisma, it's not necessarily something that people are searching for. So if I can wrap it in a package that people are interested in, so I've done videos on the presidential candidates, I've done videos on popular pop culture figures like Conor McGregor or Will Smith. And then most recently, Game of Thrones new season come out. I'm a huge fan. So talking about some of the power strategies in Game of Thrones and how they might relate to a more modern day style of interaction is really where a lot of people initially find us. And then from there, we talk about stuff that you would care about in your day to day, like how to make a friend at a coffee shop or what to say to your boss when you're trying to not get into conflict with him. So those are the things that we eventually teach, but it definitely starts with that outer packaging of what people are searching for.
Awesome. Now, I am one of your customers. I bought Charisma University. And one of the reasons I did, as opposed to some of the other people out there teaching similar stuff, is I loved how you broke it down with daily action steps to take. But one of the challenges I'm having is that I work mostly from home other than on the weekends. So I'm just wondering if you have any advice for how to incorporate that or how I might schedule that. Maybe I need to just force myself to go to Starbucks every day to practice.
Yeah, so I have the exact same issue. I have oftentimes when I'm working hard, I might not leave the house till 5 or 6 p.m. in the afternoon to go pick up some food. And it's the same exact thing. I think that what a lot of people don't realize about perhaps being more extroverted or feeling confident is that it really is a habit. And even myself, I've seen backslides. So if I don't get out of the house and do it, I'm in trouble. What I tend to try to do are schedule, like you said, things in my day that are simultaneously things that will be fun for me, that might allow me to run an errand, that get me in front of other people. So rather than going just to the gym and lifting weights with my headphones in, I might sign up for a group class somewhere. And that allows me to make friends with people before, after, and speak to the trainers. Rather than going to this store right next to my house, I might take a walk down a crowded promenade, smile at people in the street, and then go talk to people at Chipotle or wherever it is that I'm eating. So I do find that if you work from home, you've got to schedule times to get out of the house, because otherwise that muscle of speaking to people and feeling confident begins to atrophy.
Absolutely. Well, that's been I deal with depression sometimes. And when I was about 13 years ago, I was in broadcasting school and I was around people all day long. We were all talking and doing our little comedy bits on the air. And I was on fire. And then after school ended, I sunk into a depression and I was getting really, so I was socially isolating myself. And now I find it, even though I am sort of a naturally extroverted person, like you said, it really is a muscle. And if you don't practice it, it can become terrifying, even for someone who is more naturally confident.
Mm-hmm. Totally. And I think that what a lot of people, and I've had to come to grips to myself as someone who is very of the mindset that if it's to be, it's up to me, I can make anything happen, is that the most powerful way to shape my experience of my own life is to control my environment. Meaning I can set an intention to go out every day and speak to someone, or I can sign myself up for an improv comedy class once a week and make sure that I have to go. Or I can sign up for whatever the types of training that I just mentioned. Like I just did a boxing class yesterday with a bunch of people. And what I found, similar to I think your experience at school, is that the discipline to go out and force yourself to Starbucks every day doesn't always happen. So it's very helpful to have some sort of external accountability, meaning I'll pre-purchase a class, I'll pay for improv comedy, I'll set a lunch date in advance recurring with a friend of mine, or a calendar reminder to invite someone to dinner from my town. And I've found that shaping my environment so that it takes the element of choice out of, am I going to interact with these people? All of a sudden that kickstart gets me out the door, makes it more fun for me, so that all of a sudden I am beginning to choose to interact with people more often rather than just sit in my bed all day and never get out of my pajamas.
I hear you. There are days like that around here.
We've been there both, it sounds like.
Yeah. We are speaking right now with Charlie Hooper. He is from Charisma on Command.
Tune in every Tuesday from 8 till 9 p.m. for Inside Out with your hosts AJK and Zia for exciting new dance music.
We are speaking right now with Charlie Hooper. He is from Charisma on Command, which is on YouTube, as well as the website Charisma on Command. And he is, would you call yourself a charisma teacher? How would you label yourself?
So when people ask how we struggle with this, I think YouTuber is the one that I start with, and then people will often ask what I speak about. And charisma is such a vague word, I think, for a lot of people, and we try to define it on our channel. But when people ask, I just say that I teach people how to be more confident, extroverted, and confident, extroverted, and charismatic in their interactions are the main things that we talk about.
Cool. Now, this show is about spirituality, wellness, psychology. It's about really being a happy person and making the world a better place as a consequence of that. And maybe there's someone out there who's like, well, I don't think being charismatic, maybe that seems like it's kind of vain or narcissistic. Mm. So how does having more charisma relate to making the world a happier place?
Yeah, great question. I think it's circular. What I found is that certainly I started from a very self-centered perspective of I want more friends, I want more connections, I want these things in my life. But what I found is that as I've started to get more of the things that I want, what I desire is to help people at a greater level. So the reason that charisma matters, if you're wondering how you can give back more, one of the things that we were able to do is we raised $15,000 with a single video that we put up on YouTube for Charity Water. And understanding what is likely to make someone reach into their pocket and donate money to someone that they will never meet and never hear from really does require an understanding on the basics of persuasion and what makes people tick. And so if you want to make an impact on the world, you can't do it by yourself. So understanding charisma, understanding that people are going to respond more positively to a confident individual who has the right mindsets really does, I think, set you up to be able to make a greater positive impact no matter what your cause is. And I will say that as I've started to get more of the things that I felt like I needed, more of the relationships in my life, just being a happier person, I think there's a natural progression to where you're like, okay, that's nice, but what about something more? And so I find that when people are filled up, when they're not depressed, when they're not just focused on the ways in which they lack and they hurt, they naturally want to give back more. So I think that not only does it help you to persuade people, it actually makes you want to contribute more.
Beautiful. And I think that's really important that people say, you know, if you want to be, you want love, you've got to give love and all of that. But I'm wondering what your view is on people who don't have those basic things. Maybe they didn't get that as kids, or they're extremely lonely, where they're in a position where, frankly, they don't have a lot to give.
Totally. I think that the first answer is you got to put your own oxygen mask on first, which is tough. And ironically, one of the ways that you take care of yourself can be by focusing on other people. So you mentioned that sometimes you would get into a depressed state, be in your house. And I'm sure that one of the things that we've all experienced when we're down or when we're depressed is that it's an intense focus on yourself. It's about all the things that are not going right for you. So stepping out and volunteering, or even just donating, just giving $5 to a homeless person on the street has such an uplifting effect on your mood. So I think go about it in two ways. One, force yourself. Give something today if you're in that state, right? Just go give $5 to a person who's sitting outside a coffee shop. See how it makes you feel. And then second, focus on filling yourself up. I think that a number of ways to start are, like I said, by developing some of the skills that you might find interesting, whether that means one of the ones I loved, I'll mention again, is improv comedy, because I think that's just great for mood. But also there's a number of basic books that I would recommend. Six Pillars of Self-Esteem is fantastic for building that baseline level of worthiness up, which is essential, I think, to being a functioning human being.
I was wondering who recommended that book to me, because I just finished reading it. So yeah. It might have been you. I have a question about Six Pillars of Self-Esteem.
Sure.
Did you go through all of those? He has like a 31-week plan or something with all these statements, segments.
Yeah. So I did not do 30 weeks of it. I have gone through what I did. And the criticism that I have of that book is that some of the stems for me were not as – for those of you who haven't heard, basically there's an exercise in there that is – it gives you a beginning of a sentence that says, if I had 5% more integrity today, dot, dot, dot. And then you're supposed to, as fast as you can, you go through and you write 6 to 10 answers. So if I had 5% more integrity today, I would tell my boss how I really felt. I would be honest with this person who I've been lying to. I would go to the gym because I want to treat myself right. And what it does is it very quickly shows to you the ways in which you are letting yourself down. Because what self-esteem is it's just your reputation with yourself. You can lie to other people, but you cannot hide the lies from yourself, and they do drag your self-esteem down. So being forced to confront it with these very rapid-fire sentence stems makes you go out and begin to change those things in your life, which in turn boost your self-esteem. So I did go through and I did those. I definitely made changes. I didn't do them for 30 weeks. And what I actually found is that there were certain stems that for me clicked more, like the integrity one. So I would do those ones repeatedly, and other ones I didn't feel were very important to me, so I didn't focus on them quite as much.
Now, were those the things that weren't as important? Were they things you kind of already felt confident about?
Yeah, they were things, and I can't remember them, but they, as I went through and I wrote my stems, I was like, I really don't have anything to say. This isn't connecting with me. But certain ones, you know, if I were more honest with the people in my life that I love the most, that might have been like, ooh, like there's definitely someone that I'm not being completely clear with that I need to have a conversation with.
Hmm. Thank you. And I can imagine, Charlie, that forcing yourself to write those statements helps you see that you're not doing that. Because I think most of us, unless we're like a compulsive liar or something, most of us consider ourselves to be honest people. But there are little lies that we tell to ourselves and others, lies of omission, or when people say, how are you doing? You say, fine. You know, I mean, that kind of stuff happens without even being on our radar.
Yes. And I think while not consciously on our radar, there is a bit of a subconscious tally. And what I noticed is that taking honesty, for example, if you know that you're the type of person who is quote unquote an honest person, but there's times at which your friend asks you where you are and you say that I'm on the way and really you haven't even left the house yet, you're still putting on your makeup, like that stuff starts to add up. And what it does is it lets you know subtly in your head that not everything that you say is true. So when you find yourself in a situation where you're confronted and somebody says, you lied to me, you don't immediately know. You don't go, there is no way that is possible. I would never. Part of you doubts it. And it makes you less convincing in those situations where you really didn't lie. It makes you less certain. It makes you less persuasive because there's always some subtle part of your subconscious that is signaling to other people through really subtle body language tics that not everything you say is 100% true. And so when you can start to iron out those tiny little lies that most people don't think matter, it's incredible the positive effect they have on your relationships, your ability to persuade other people, and your general sense of joy and happiness, because you really begin to respect your own word.
Okay, Charlie. Sometimes, though, those tiny little lies, I mean, I've practiced the how are you doing today? And when I had broken up with my boyfriend, I was like, okay, you know what? I'm not going to lie about this. Yeah. And you find that most people actually really don't want to know how you're doing today. They don't care. They just want you to say fine so that you can move on with your day.
Totally. And so how to handle that. So I think that what you want to do is this is a great question. You're getting down into the nits and grits of honesty. So I don't know how fascinating this is for everybody else, but when I think of honesty, I think it's understanding the meaning and being honest about the meaning behind any sort of communication. So it is certainly true that when your barista asks you, how are you doing today? They're not actually asking, tell me about the feelings you're having. They are just simply saying greetings, right? And so I do think an honest way to respond, even if you're having a bit of a rough day with a barista is, you know, they ask you how you're doing. They're not saying, what is the feeling you're having? So it's fine to say back to them, I'm doing fine. But if someone in your life that comes up to you that has perhaps more of an ongoing relationship with you politely says, how are you doing? I do think for them, it then becomes meaningful to share, you know, it's been a kind of a rough day. Like I just got out of a breakup. I'm trying to keep my chin up about it, but it's been a little bit tricky. But I'll be okay, right? There's a positivity that allows you to not necessarily scare the other person off while still communicating the fact that it's a tough day for you. That I think can improve that relationship and is honest and isn't something you need to share with every single passerby on the street that says, how are you doing?
Good to know. So it's sort of, it's a level of honesty within the context of the situation.
Yes. And I think it's behind any word that someone says, there is a subcommunicated meaning to the interaction. And like you said, there's often times where people are not – many times where they're not asking you, how are you doing? They are simply saying hello in words that are literally, how are you doing? And in those cases, it requires some social understanding, but typically it's with people that you don't have any sort of an ongoing relationship with. It would not be dishonest to say, I'm doing fine. How are you? But if you were to continue that conversation with that person and, you know, to get to know them and they were to ask – and say, so what do you have planned for the rest of the day now? And they're genuinely curious. You might be like, honestly, I'm just going to go home and watch movies because I had a tough breakup the other day, right? And at that point, you can share because they are genuinely asking about what you have planned or what you are feeling. That is the underlying meaning of the question at that point in conversation.
So it sounds like you're saying it's not always a question of responding directly to the words that they're using. It's understanding the energy and intent behind what they're saying and being honest towards that.
Exactly. And I think what people, that's totally it. Because I think what people run into is an issue when they're being literally honest. And sometimes this creates space for glaring lies, right? Somebody asks them, did you say that, I'm just take the example of a girlfriend and a boyfriend. And the girlfriend is suspicious that the boyfriend went out and did something that he shouldn't have done the night before. And she says, did you go out with your friends last night? And he says, no, I didn't go out with my friends. Why would I do that? But actually, he went out with his coworkers and drank a lot and went to the strip club or whatever, right? Technically, he's being honest, but he's missing the intent of the question, which is, did you do this thing that we talked about that I asked you not to do? And so it's not about being literally honest. It's about genuinely trying to understand the intent of someone's question and responding to that intent.
Ah, but that was such a good loophole. Now we can't use that anymore.
I know. And for a long time, I got away with that loophole too, where I could just let her the law be honest and feel okay about it. But I don't think it's the way to go.
Oh, well. Okay, I'm a little disappointed with that, but because I've used that loophole before. Technically, I'm being honest.
Yes, technically I didn't. You didn't ask about whatever thing. Yeah, I know that one very well.
If you have to say technically, then you're probably not being very honest.
I think that's a good rule of thumb.
Yeah. All right.
Hey there.
Barev.
We're the Armenian Students Association, and we're here to bring together everyone,
Armenians and non-Armenians,
who are interested in learning about the Armenian culture here at UBC.
Find us on Facebook at ASAUBC to stay up to date. We look forward to seeing you at our future events.
We are speaking right now with Charlie Hoopert from Charisma on Command on YouTube. Is probably the best place to find him. You can see videos about charisma, videos about making friends, and my favorite are the breakdowns of celebrities and characters on television. So the reason that I invited you on the show was something that you said about, you were talking about starting your business, Charisma on Command. I think you'd been working in a corporate job, making pretty good money, and something was leading you to doing this business, but you felt fear. And you said, because you felt that fear, if I'm just paraphrasing, that was why you had to pursue it. Can you say more about that?
Yes. So I think that oftentimes the fear that we feel with regards to social situations in particular, I'm not saying like fear of going to war or fear of getting punched or things like that. But when we feel a social fear, it shows us the edge of our comfort zone, which also shows us the edge of the things that we're likely to achieve in our life. So for instance, I mentioned to you earlier that I've been struggling with some movers that have not delivered my things today. And I'm a person, believe it or not, after all these years, that hates in particular conflict over the phone. Something about it is just frustrating. I can't see the other person. And I know that when I call these people up and I say, hey, you're 6 days late with my delivery, that it's going to create conflict and I'm going to have to be firm, but understanding, but make sure that they get my stuff here. And so part of me starts to avoid picking that phone up. And so everything I can do, that I feel it in the morning, is like, avoid that, get this done, do work here. And so what I've learned over the years is that that fear is a very good sign of the first thing that I need to do. Because when I get that done, one, it clears my brain for everything else in the rest of the day and gives me a huge sense of accomplishment. But two, the thing that I'm afraid of oftentimes has the most upside. So I talked, I got these people and they weren't going to deliver my furniture for another 14 days. And I was able to, through various phone calls, get them to deliver it today after 6 days. When people are afraid of going to their boss and perhaps saying that I've been working really hard, I want to make a case for a promotion, or if there's someone that they have a crush on that they'd like to ask, that fear is a really strong indicator that there's something in their life that they want and they are stopping themselves from even risking rejection to get, because it's so important to them. Because if it wasn't important to them, they probably wouldn't feel that fear around it. So what I've learned to do is, when I feel a fear in a social context in particular, it's almost a reflex at this point that becomes the first thing that I have to do. And I recommend that to people. It's a tough thing to implement, but if you can do it, the results that it creates in your life are really just more of the things that you want the most.
Thank you, Charlie. That
Okay, so when I was talking about your Charisma on Command and your videos a couple of minutes ago, I kind of blanked out because I was trying to think of the name of my most favorite video of yours. And it's Robert Downey Jr.
His
name was escaping me. You did a breakdown of him in quite a confrontational interview, actually, which most people would probably have found terrifying. And they would have given in and said too much, or they would have not respected their own boundaries. Do you recall this video that I'm talking about?
Yes, totally. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Would you mind maybe explaining it? You probably do it better than I do.
Yes. So let's see. So he's in an interview with a guy from the BBC, and it's for a movie. And they have, before these interviews, they agree about the types of things they're going to talk about. It's really just an advertising pitch for the movie. But the interviewer wanted to get, I guess, a juicy scoop. So he started asking about Robert Downey Jr.'s past. And he asked a number of passive-aggressive, I would say, questions regarding his drug history. Mm-hmm. And he started saying, like, that doesn't really seem related to what we're talking about here. And the guy continued. So throughout that, you watch him, you can watch his body tense, as I think a lot of ours would, and he begins to get frustrated. But the way that he deals with it is, I think, is fantastic and is really appropriate. He first subtly directs the conversation away with a joke. That's enough for most people, but the interviewer is persistent. The interviewer asks another question about drugs. He makes a direct comment. He says, you know, are we on Diane Sawyer? Like, this doesn't seem like what we ought to be talking about. And then the guy asks a third one, and he says, okay, that's going to be it. I'm going to pack up my stuff. And he just calmly walks out of the room. And I think that that is a fantastic model for boundaries that you might have in your own life when someone is treating you in a way that you don't like, whether they're putting you down, whatever it is. And it's generally, first, a joking redirect is really strong. Second, directly calling it out in a direct, but you're not making them wrong. You're not saying you're a jerk for doing this. You're saying this isn't what we ought to be talking about right now, or I'd prefer if we didn't talk about this. And then if they don't respect your request, it's to simply remove yourself from the situation. So that video has provided for me sort of a framework to think about conflict when I have people who are overstepping boundaries that I might have.
Thank you. Yes, you explained it so much better than I would have. And as I'm watching that, I mean, he is just so powerful in that interview. The way he's ticked off, but he stays composed. I'm just wondering, I mean, how would someone get practice responding in that way? Because once you get into fight or flight, all bets are off. And, you know, or at least for myself, my face would be red and I'd be probably sweating and...
Yeah.
I'm just wondering, are there ways that you can kind of practice having that sense of calm or those boundaries?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think the first one comes from a lot of the self-esteem exercises that I described will really make clear what your boundaries are. Because if you go through and you're like, if I respected myself 5% more today, you might say, I wouldn't let this friend put me down in this way. And that'll make clear, like, oh man, I need to have a boundary here. But then in terms of practice, there's certainly times in your life where it doesn't blindside you. In that interview, he was pretty blindsided, and it's impressive that he kept his composure. But I talked about getting on the phone and knowing that there was conflict coming. You might have someone in your life that you know that you need to speak to. So what you can do before those is you can plan out – this is a longer thing, but kind of a decision tree. And if you're in Charisma University, which you are, the conflict module at the end talks about this at length. But basically you can go through and plan out the most likely flow of conversation. And I talk about things to make sure that it doesn't devolve into them yelling at you. So it's a pretty simple flow. And then just having a sense of, okay, I'm going to say this. They're either going to respond positively, accept what I said, in which case, great, conversation over. Or they're going to say, I'll call you whatever I want. I don't care. Like, you're supposed to take it. In which case, I'm going to respond like this. And they'll accept it. Or they'll say, well, if you don't like me enough to let me be honest with you, then we're not friends. And then you have a third option there. So preparing that decision tree before conflict that you know is coming can be very powerful. And then there's always the situations where you are just – somebody surprises you. And the best thing that you can do if you are not prepared is control your breathing, your body language, meaning you're going to breathe deeper. You're going to open up your body language. You're going to expose your elbows, your wrist, your throat. One quick story is that I had a semi-surprise performance review when I was in the consulting world. And it was a mixed review. You know, there were some good things, but there were some not good things. And I wasn't prepared for it. But the best thing that I was able to do was to sit in my chair, and I felt myself wanting to lock up, fire back, either immediately apologize or immediately say, no, that's not right, or say, well, you told me not to do that. And instead to just slow down my breathing, sit in the chair, purposefully open my elbows, the inner elbow, expose it, my wrist, expose it, pull my shoulders back and my chest, all the vulnerable spots, to physically show those to the person, to uncross my legs. That put me in a state of mind that was much more capable of a thoughtful response than that closed off knee-jerk reaction would have been. So those are the high-level things that I would consider.
Thank you so much, Charlie. So it sounds like that open body language serves two purposes. It subconsciously tells your own mind that you're safe and confident, and it's also a message to the other person that you're confident.
Exactly. And I think, honestly, the one that is most powerful is the first one, because when we get into that freak out, fight or flight mode, everything speeds up. We give ourselves less time than we truly have. And a 5-second pause, while it can feel like an eternity to the person who is being expected to speak, is really not that long. And it gives you enough time to gather your thoughts and think. And it also opens that other person up, because it makes them, okay, how is he going to respond?
Oh, wow. I have so many things that I want to ask you. And I really appreciate that you've taken the time, especially when you're dealing with this moving issue going on. Again, if you want to check out Charlie Hoopert, you can find him on YouTube, would be the best place, Charisma on Command, or his website, charismaoncommand.com. And the class, the tutorials, there's, I don't even know how many weeks of that there is on Charisma University.
Yeah, so there are 6 weeks of primary lessons, which is the core course, and then ones that we've added just based on requests from students. So there's an additional thing on comedy, there's an additional thing on conflict, there's an additional thing on workplace relationships. I believe there's 4 or 5 at this point. I can't even remember them all at the top of my head. But if you are interested in the conflict one, I think that you would get a lot out of that one.
Awesome. Thank you. And I know that how I got introduced to it was you were giving away a little free segment of your course. And then there was a little segment that was on special. And that was how I kind of got a feel for what you were doing and made me want to upgrade. So is there a free ebook or something that people can get?
So in terms of the free stuff, what I would recommend is we've got, like you said, over 100 videos on YouTube. If you want, you can start with the Robert Downey Jr. one. Just type Robert Downey Jr. Charisma on Command. And that'll give you a good flavor for the types of analysis that we do. The YouTube channel, like you said, it's much more edutainment. It's fun. It's characters from Game of Thrones. And then the course is a lot more actionable stuff. They're different flavors, but they're intended for a different audience. Like I said, YouTube is for people who just maybe want to watch a video and that's it. But if you do like that and you want to know more how to apply it, like you mentioned that there's action steps and daily guides on what to do on a day-to-day basis, then the course might be something for you. And if you sign up through our email list, which is just on our homepage, charismaoncommand.com, you can, I believe, check out the first impressions portion of Charisma University at a discount to the entire course.
Perfect. And first impressions are obviously really important. And I think if you're stuck on how to make a first impression, you're not going to get to all those other areas of influence and having deeper relationships.
Totally. And that's why we put it first, is because it's unfortunate, but I would say that's the area that most often is the bottleneck in our relationships, because if you don't make it past that, like you said, there is nothing else.
So I have a question, actually. This has been something that's been coming up for me recently. I'm fairly okay at making first impressions, depending on the context or the scenario. But I have trouble maintaining contact or deciding who to reach out to. So as an example, a lot of my friends, I don't know if it's just because they don't maybe like me that much, or maybe they're just more passive people, but I tend to be the organizer of most things. So if I step back for a few weeks and I'm not reaching out, I don't hear from anyone.
Mm-hmm.
And so that kind of makes me reassess, well, how much do these people really value me? How much more effort do I want to put in? And then I tend to only end up inviting them to group events. So how do you decide who, because there's only so many hours in the day, how do you decide who to invest your time and energy into?
Yeah, so I think that everybody, and I've noticed this, I have a number of friends, and we all have our own style of interacting. I have a medium-sized, close-knit circle that I will do most everything with. So meaning that if I'm in a city, there's normally anywhere between 3 and 6 close friends that no matter where I'm going, I'm going to take at least one of them. And then on top of that, if I know that I'm going somewhere that's going to be particularly interesting to a friend perhaps on the periphery, I'll say, hey, we're going to work out on the beach. You're my workout buddy. Do you want to come with us? Or, hey, we're going to go work at Starbucks. You're my entrepreneur buddy. Do you want to come join us? And that is how I am able to have someone that I know that I'm really close with whenever I go, and I'm able to slowly expand that circle as well. And the way that it expands, again, is when I'm out at Starbucks or on the beach, I'm saying hi to people, I'm making friends, I'll take numbers. This literally happened yesterday. We went to cryotherapy for, you know, getting that machine and freeze your body for about 2 minutes. And the guy who ran the cryotherapy thing was a local and wound up coming out with us last night. And then today he invited us on a hike. So I find that what has worked for me is by having a core group that I can, you know, go be social with and then invite other people to take part in, I will sometimes get invites from that person, and sometimes that person will only wait for invitations from me. And either way, it's totally fine by me because I've got stuff to do.
Cool. I love that. Thank you. Yeah, that's sort of how I end up conducting myself. But when I just was having that question because I've been spending a lot of time thinking about it. I'm also thinking about possibly moving out of the city and into a smaller town, just kind of assessing all of those options.
Definitely. So this is actually probably not the next, but the second to next thing we're going to add to Charisma University is the friendship piece. And it's a lot of people who are moving to new cities or for whatever reason need to start a new friend group. So if you do have questions on that, shoot me an email, let me know specifically whatever your questions are, and we'll make sure to cover that in the course.
Oh, yay. Oh, I'll definitely be emailing you about that. Okay, thank you. This is CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from unceded Musqueam territory on the University of British Columbia campus in Vancouver.
In the words of Henry David Thoreau, it's not what you look at that matters, it's what you see. Multicultural Ministries is a national, cross-Canada, nonprofit organization that runs temple tours and gives unique perspectives into different religions from around the world, including Buddhism, Sikhism, and Islam. To find out more about them, the tours they offer, or to book one, please visit templetour.weebly.com.
We are speaking with Charlie Hoopert. You can find him on YouTube at Charisma on Command, or go to his website, charismaoncommand.com. You've mentioned improv comedy a bunch of times in this hour, and I enrolled in improv comedy because of your recommendation. So I'm curious what got you involved with improv and how it helped you.
Yeah, so I got into it. I'm glad that you did it. How have you liked it, by the way?
I've liked it. I feel like I need way more practice to get – I've gotten some of the benefits. I definitely see the mindfulness and presence piece to it, mm-hmm. and it's been fun, especially in when I first started it, I was pretty depressed, and I was going every week, and even though it was painful to get myself out the door and to jump up in class and participate, I made myself do it, and I felt a big sense of accomplishment at the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's scary. It can be scary. And so I got into it probably 3 or 4 years ago. I was in New York City, and I haven't done it consistently because I've been abroad for a large portion of those 3 or 4 years, and it's tough to do in a foreign language. But I started in New York City. I went to the People's Improv Theater, and that was just kind of on a whim. I had somebody recommended it. I showed up, but I quickly, one of the things that I most appreciated about it, there was two big pieces. And one is that it allowed me to trust more deeply in my spontaneity. And while it is certainly good, and we teach strategies, outlines, three steps to do this or that thing, what improv did was it gave me a few more of those outlines, like here's how to conduct a scene, but it also let me trust that I did not need to plan out ahead what I was going to do, that I could trust on the moment, that situation, and the person that I was speaking to give me enough something to respond to that I could come up with I would, words would leave my mouth. Whether they were funny or not would be up to the audience. But it really gave me this sense of comfort in situations where I didn't know what was coming. And that is tremendous, because I think what happens is a lot of people when they're maybe on stage for improv or they're in conversation, they start to panic. And what they do is they go internal and they start rehearsing what they're going to say, and they lose track of the conversation and the fact that it has moved on beyond where they were going to jump in. And all of a sudden they're behind and they can't fit, and now they have nothing to say. Versus what improv really helps you do is stay in the moment and respond spontaneously. And then it teaches you how to be funny while you do that, which is incredible. So it's a skill that is fantastic for all kinds of conversation. I feel like it's helped me in any interpersonal aspect of my life where I needed to interact with someone. I felt like I could quickly make them laugh, lighten the mood, and then we could go from there.
Thank you. And being able to lighten the mood is a really important skill.
Mm-hmm.
It's something I'm way too serious, I think. So I need to practice that more. Charlie, I'm curious about if you have any kind of mindfulness or meditation practice.
Yes. So I have been experimenting with a number of different ones. And I mentioned earlier that I noticed that controlling your environment is the number one thing to do. I've been traveling, so this has slipped. But now that I've settled more in California, I am going to shift between either some sort of meditation. I use the Headspace app and do 15, 20 minutes of meditation where it's semi-guided. I also do yoga or stretching, and I will, when I have time, this was amazing in Las Vegas, they had these $20 hour-long massages. Wow. And I would go and do that. And that combination made me feel extremely clear. I wouldn't do it every day, certainly, but it gave me time to think. It also gave me time to not think and just kind of be. And I found that creating that space, whether you surf, whether you take walks or get massages or meditate, is one of the most underrated, underappreciated things that someone can do to be more productive and happy. For me, the answer is not spend more time working or more time trying to make friends or more time writing scripts for videos. It's less time on that and more time just letting your brain recuperate, recover, and be creative in a non-pressure situation. That's where the good things come at this point in my life.
Beautiful. Thank you. And when you talk about your environment, I'm wondering about the space where you live, because when you're doing videos, you've done some videos in a bedroom where you were staying. So what do you do to visually control your environment so that you're feeling your best?
This is a great question. And the answer is recently very little. So I was in an Airbnb, which is why I was shooting my videos in a bedroom. And then I spent the last 2 months, I've hardly been anywhere for more than 5 or 6 days. So I've had limited control over my environment. But in terms of the things that I am excited to get back to, it's control over the lighting, meaning I will spend the money to get nice lamps that add a lot of light or have windows that I can keep open during the day and closed at night. Like making sure that I have control over the amount of light in my day is huge. And then the second big thing is that I will prominently have a whiteboard. And I'm not a super organized person, but this system works for me. It's just I'll have the 5 to 7 things that I want to do every single day written on the left-hand side of that whiteboard. And I keep it somewhere I can see it. And I just go by and I put next to it when I've done it. So one of them is going to be exercise. One of them might be call someone that you love. One of them might be spend time working. And that just keeps me, when I'm wandering and I'm prone to just surf the internet or mess around, I'll see that and I'll go, oh, I haven't practiced guitar today. And instead of surfing the internet, I'll go practice guitar. And so that's been a really effective thing for me in terms of making my environment serve me.
Thank you. Again, we are speaking with Charlie Hoopert from Charisma on Command on charismaoncommand.com or on YouTube is the best place to find him. And we have just a few minutes left in the show. I'm wondering what you are most excited to talk about or what you feel is the most important.
So right now in my life, the thing that I am focusing the most on is I mentioned putting things in interesting wrappers for people. This is not one of those things. It is the belief systems that I think underpin a lot of our actions. And so what I've realized is that myself, everyone that I've ever encountered, whenever we're doing something that doesn't serve us, I'll give you an example. Somebody who might be in a relationship that everyone else around them can see that like this isn't working, but they continue to go back to it. There's the surface level problem of, okay, this relationship is not working. But beneath that, there's a deeper rooted problem that probably impacts so much of their life. And in the case of a relationship, it might be that they have what I would call an addiction to love, because at a deep sense, they feel like if they are not loved, then they are not worthy. And so they stay in that bad relationship because that provides them with this love that makes them feel like their life has meaning. And if they lose that, it's a panic. So even though the relationship is destructive and it's not working, they stick with it. And I think that even the healthiest among us have these limiting beliefs, and they are by their very nature hidden from us because if we could see them, we wouldn't deal with them. And when pointed out, we go, that's not me. You know, I'm not the type of person that has to deal with that. And so what I've been trying to do is come up with a system to expose these to myself and then work through them. And that's been what I've done lately. So one of the big things that drives me is, I think, competitiveness and a desire to be better. And if I look at my life, you know, I wanted to have a huge YouTube channel. And there were people on my way as we grew our channel that I said, I need to have more than that person, or I need to have more than that person. And while in that one arena, I realized, oh, that's kind of silly. If I take a step back, I realize I am competitive in every area of my life. And it makes me insecure, on edge, frustrated, and also stops me from really connecting with some people that I could see as serious competition that could be threatening to that sense of superiority. So what I've had to work on recently is going through and trying to eliminate the underlying belief that says I need to be superior to be worthy, or I need to be better than to be loved. And it doesn't sound like maybe like something that everyone can connect with, but I do believe that there's some deep-rooted stepping stone that we all think that we need to have in order to be worthy or loved, and it really limits our life. And so what I'm trying to do is to create a system to identify what that might be in you and then help you to work through it so that it doesn't limit you anymore.
Okay, I definitely want that. So when you figure that out, is that going to be added to Charisma University, or will that be a separate course?
So it's going to be, I think what we're going to do, and don't hold me to this, but it's going to be a separate course because it is going to be big, but I think we're going to probably grandfather current Charisma University members in and just give them access.
Cool. Yeah, because that's one of the things that, I mean, we hear, I've been doing this show for something like 9 years, and so we hear about limiting beliefs all the time, mm-hmm. but if they're not something that you're conscious of, that's one whole first problem. And then even when you kind of become aware of the, whether you're addicted to love or, you know, I mean, I have abandonment issues, which I think is quite very, very common, whether people will admit it to themselves or not. But being aware of that is just one tiny piece of the puzzle.
Yep.
Then you've got to figure out how to battle that. And because of the way our brains are wired, even if we're actively working on it, if we get into a situation we're not prepared for, just like the Robert Downey Jr. video, you know, most people wouldn't have been able to handle that calmly.
And exactly. And the good news is I really do think I'm onto something.
Cool.
So I will say it is the primary ones that I've identified. I'll see if I can pull up my notes here. are, you mentioned abandonment. That's certainly one. Being guilt-driven, being addicted to love, being addicted to comfort or laziness or having things go easy, being afraid of rejection, being addicted to the approval of other people, thinking that other people's judgment of whether you are a good or a bad person is indicative of whether you are a good or a bad person. These are some of the biggest limiting beliefs that have such far-reaching effects onto all of our decisions. And I do feel like, I mean, I have right now it's a jumble of notes, but within the coming weeks, I'm going to be organizing it and filming it and hopefully having something that will help people to identify those beliefs and move past them.
Amazing. Another one that I just thought of, and I don't know if it's in there already, is the inability to ask for help.
Oh, that is not in there, actually. It's a good one.
It's probably rooted to some other belief, but I know that's a common one.
Writing it right now.
Well, I know you've got the moving situation to deal with, and I want to let you get on with your day, but it has been such a pleasure speaking with you. I'm wondering if there's one thing, and maybe you've already covered this, but if there's one thing that listeners can take home and implement today or this week, what would that be?
Great question. One thing that we've talked about. So I would encourage people to make one, to think of a goal that they might have that they might not have achieved yet. And it could be maybe they'd like to go to the gym, maybe they'd like to drink more water every day, maybe they'd like to pick up a musical instrument, maybe they'd like to do improv comedy. And do something right now, like literally while you're listening, before we wrap up, that commits you to doing that going forward. So that would mean taking out your credit card and signing up for an improv comedy class, even though it doesn't start for 3 weeks. Or you want to drink more water, going online to Amazon and purchasing a gallon holder of water, which you're going to keep next to your desk and you're going to fill it up every morning. Because the changes that we want to make, while we might feel really excited about them in the moment, inevitably they drop off because we don't have the environmental support that you and I talked about. So do something right now to give yourself that environmental support, to give yourself that accountability or that push. And I think you'll find that that simple purchase that you might make will go a long, long way to actually getting that checked off your list of things that you should do but haven't done yet.
Thank you, Charlie. That brings up one last question, and then I promise I will let you go.
No problem.
You coach people one-on-one as well, when you have time, I believe. When I'm asked, what is it that you want or what's a goal that you have, what automatically comes to mind for me is, I don't know. And then I start to panic that I don't know. And I imagine if you have coaching clients that may be a problem for some people as well.
Yeah, so we haven't done coaching in a while. And this was a decision both from a business perspective and from an impact perspective, is that while I can certainly have a deep impact on one individual when I speak to them, at the degree that the business has gotten to where we just hit 1 million subscribers, if I spend an hour coaching one person and maybe they don't want what was said shared with the rest of the world, that is not as impactful as making a video that could maybe hit 100,000 people or 200,000 people. So I've stopped doing the one-on-one coaching, even though I did do it for a long time at the beginning of the business. But in terms of defining what you want, there's a number of things that could be getting in the way. But what is a potentially helpful exercise is to remove realistic constraints and say, okay, if I woke up with whatever, $10 million, and if I knew that no matter what I tried, I wouldn't be rejected and couldn't fail, what would I want to do with a normal day? And you'll get some crazy stuff in there. You're like, you know, I wake up and my butler cleans up after me or whatever it is. But you also might find that if you knew that you couldn't fail, you would want to perform music. That's one for me is, you know, I don't necessarily think of it, but if I knew that I couldn't fail, I go, oh, I'd like to do music. So sometimes those questions that remove limitations of finance or remove limitations of I could fail, people might judge me. If you can give yourself permission to just free write and play with that, it often leads to some directions in which there might be things that you want more.
Beautiful. And so your advice is figure out whatever one of those things is and take one step towards it.
Exactly. So if you, like you said, if you're like, you know, one of the things is I want to go out meet more people because I work. Just go to meetup.com and pick one thing. It doesn't have to be a great thing, but one class that you're going to go to one time. And if you find one that you love, fantastic. Go multiple times. You might – well, sorry about that. We've got an ambulance driving by.
Sorry.
But whatever it is, you can just sign yourself up for something. It can be free. A Toastmasters class, anything that you will do in the future, and you're not going to want to do it on the day of, but you'll be happy that you did.
Beautiful. Well, thank you so much, Charlie. We've been speaking with Charlie Hoopert from Charisma on Command. Go to YouTube. Maybe that's your first step, is go to YouTube and look up that Robert Downey Jr. video or some of the Game of Thrones videos and learn something about how you can have a better life today. Charisma on Command. Thank you so much for your time, Charlie.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
And thank you for your time and for listening and being with us. I want to send you lots of love. Be well. Namaste. Up next is Parts Unknown with DJ Chris Arific on CITR.
Join Team PowerSmart. Set an energy conservation target of 10%. You'll get access to tools to help you conserve, and you can track your progress online. Visit bchydro.com/Team Power Smart to join today. This message brought to you by BC Hydro Power Smart and CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver.
Without the help and support of our friends, we here at CITR wouldn't be able to bring you all the great music, art, cinema, and culture that you love. Thanks to the long-standing support from the Rio Theatre, we are able to keep you informed on all the great artists, films, and everything else coming to town there. For all the current information about who and what's playing at the Rio Theatre, visit their website at www.riotheatre.ca.
Your band playing on and on and on. Gosh, so loud.
Man, I wish we had a safe place to play music.
Yeah, and shows too.
The Safe Amplification Site Society is a non-profit group dedicated to establishing a legal, affordable, all-ages venue for music and arts in Vancouver. For more information or to get involved, check out www.safeamp.org.
Repeat after me. Bugger off. Bugger off. Sod. Sod. Bloody. Bloody. Now put them all together. Bugger off, you bloody sod.
Bugger off, you bloody sod.
Okay, you're in. Let's smash things up.
Every Saturday from noon to 1 p.m. Listen to Generation Annihilation on CITR 101.9 FM, UBC Radio in Vancouver.
CITR and Timber Concerts present Waxahachie with guests Cayetana and Snail Mail, Tuesday, July 25th at the Imperial Vancouver. Doors are at 8 and this event is 19 plus only. You can buy tickets now at both Red Cap Records locations, Zulu Records, and online at timberconcerts.com.
You're listening to 101.9 CITR. This is the Parts Unknown Show.